This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Charlotte is emerging from the Great Recession. We know that because of the various projects now underway or on the drawing boards that will change the city, hopefully, for the better. One of those projects is just south of the Uptown area, which will connect the neighborhoods of South End with the Uptown in a unique way. We'll talk about the so-called rail trail later in the program. But first, another project just north of the city. It's a mixed-use neighborhood that combines social equity, design, sustainability, and art into one package called Brightwalk. And here to talk about all this is urban planner Terry Shook, president of the design firm Shook Kelly, which was part of the design team behind Brightwalk. Welcome back to the program.
Thanks.
David Howard is senior vice president of strategic initiatives and fund development at Charlotte Mecklenburg Housing Partnership, the largest developer of affordable workforce housing in the region. Thank you for joining.
Thank you, Mike.
And Emma Littlejohn is back with us. She's a real estate market analyst with the Littlejohn Group. They are a housing consulting firm, and they serve as Brightwalk's project manager and marketing consultant. Good to see you as well.
Good morning.
Good morning. Several months ago, Terry Shook was on this program, and we were talking about the history of Historic South End, a program in which we learned that Historic South End is not, in fact, historic. But I made the mistake of asking the question, what's next? And this program is the answer to to that question, because Brightwalk is one of the things that is next. Is that correct?
That's right, Mike, and thanks for taking that bait, because I think it is the one of the new best neighborhoods that's being developed in Charlotte. We've had a history of them that, you know, goes back to the first streetcar neighborhood of Dilworth, right? I mean, it was a resort, essentially. Can you believe that? People will live in downtown in the four wards and have a country home in Dilworth and take the streetcar. And since that time, of course, we had that whole series of great neighborhoods that developed with Myers Park next, you know. Then we had Wilmore that came part of that, Eastover, Plaza Midwood area, and basically it occupied three-quarters of the way around town. But the industrial zone, prevailing winds in many ways, caused this to be that industrial zone, and it was a place that where graveyards were and other things. Now, of course, it's that place that is the big next inner-city neighborhood. We can build the next Dilworth. We can build the next Myers Park. And, in fact, with Brightwalk, we are doing that, and it's very successful.
You know, we're a city of neighborhoods.
That's correct.
And we've been building neighborhoods for hundreds of years now, at least 100 years now. And, of course, prior to the recession, we were putting up neighborhoods in the outer regions of Mecklenburg County almost faster than you could build them. What makes this neighborhood different, aside from the fact that it's kind of an inner city neighborhood?
I think the big thing is, you know, a lot of the suburban neighborhoods appeal to a suburban mindset. And of course, the city has many different mindsets in it. Look at the population in downtown Charlotte. We have gone in a relatively short span of time since you and I have been in Charlotte, essentially, from no one essentially living in downtown to the fact that we have, what, 18,000 people or so. I'm sure we'll get that number correct at some point, but that's my guess. And now that people start to get married, start to have kids of their own, they're torn. Like, we're, you know, they can't afford, really, Dilworth and Myers Park. All you have to do is ride one weekend around. And they're looking for places to be part of the inner city vibe. They have an urban mindset. They have urban values. They're multicultural. They like the diversity. And they're looking for a place to land that they can afford. And that's what Brightwalk provides.
I was on the website yesterday, and it says the area was designed, and I'm quoting here, to meet the needs of the new American family. Now, I know that marketing uses all kinds of interesting phrases to get people intrigued, but you're talking about the millennials who want to live in an urban environment but maybe have a family now and can't live in a 1,100 square feet.
I would characterize the people that are interested in living at Brightwalk, they're people that want the lifestyle of Center City, which is a broad range of families, households, and individuals that want to enjoy Center City and all the amenities that Charlotte has developed over the years. And they believe in the city and the future growth of the North End area. The one thing they all connect on is the lifestyle of Center City. And they look at the Statesville Avenue corridor as the extension of the Cultural and Arts District, and they love being a mile from downtown.
So let's place this on the map for people. It's a mile from Uptown Charlotte.
From the square.
So you could walk it very easily.
Oh, sure.
You could certainly bike it very easily. But where is this exactly?
I'm going out Statesville Avenue. So you go out Graham Street, and then it splits at right where the SEAL test building used to be, where the new fire department headquarters is going. And you go to the left, and that's Statesville Avenue. So about a quarter mile down that road.
And this is part of a district that's part of the 2020 plan, that you've named these districts.
Yes.
What is this district called, this official area north of Uptown?
North End.
Is it really called North End?
North End is part of the...
it historic?
It's evolving.
Parts of it.
Well, there are parts of it. In fact, there's some real history. I mean, people don't realize over there, you have one of the first Model T manufacturing plants for architects. It has an Albert Kahn building, which is rather unique and fantastic.
I was going to bring that up. Who knew? We have an original factory for the Model T that Henry Ford helped design or helped to build.
And the streets around it, Mike, are called Vanderbilt, Edison. We didn't realize Dearborn. We didn't realize until we got in
this. Yeah, exactly right.
All his friends. Who knew? And that factory made Model Ts up to the Depression. And then after that, it became a factory for...
missiles.
Nike missiles.
Nike missiles.
Oh, I can remember as a kid, you know, one night, Walter Cronkite's talking about the Cuban Missile Crisis. My dad would have me over there based on his work, and I see all those Nike missiles parked along the siding there. So that man wasn't kidding last night, was he? I mean, here they are. I mean, it was truly a significant part of America.
Wow. This is part of a 98-acre revitalization project of historic Double Oaks. Tell me about Double Oaks. This is an old neighborhood that dates back to the 50s, right?
It dates back to the mid-40s, actually.
Oh, okay. All right.
And just to give you more history, it was actually developed as a series of properties by C.D. Spangler's father, C.D. Spangler Sr., I would guess. It was developed for the middle-income African-American population at the time. Mm-hmm. I actually had family that moved there, and it was actually kind of one of the in places that you went to. You know, it was the first place that you could... that you could go and have a decent property, and a lot of people saw it as a move up from where they came from. Over the years, it evolved. It became not so popular after a while. And for us, it was just part of a focus on Statesville Avenue, and it was 70 acres itself. We owned another 10 around it. Park and Rec had another 18 or so around it, and you bring all of that together, and today you have Brightwalk, 98 acres.
What happened to the homes that were there? That were built in the 40s and 50s. What happened?
Well, they had outlived their useful life. I mean, they were single-story bungalow, you know, quad units, and they just outlived their useful life. I mean, the upkeep, the maintenance was just too much.
So they weren't like homes in Dilworth. They were different.
No, they were apartments. Okay. Actually, they were all apartments. It was 570 apartments.
So we've spoken about the Charlotte 2020 vision plan in the past, and this is part of that plan. And Brightwalk anchors the north end of the plan, the Applied Innovation Corridor. Never heard of that before. What is the Applied Innovation Corridor? Who comes up with these names?
Actually, Terry started out with it, believe it or not. He was sitting there looking at maps one day and said, look at all this. It has the same characteristics of South End. What can we do about it?
That was the north end part. I think the Applied Innovation came out of the whole process. Center City Partners ran with, I guess, the city was involved and was part of that committee. But what Dave is referring to is the north end. And again, I mean, Mike, as we talked about it, South End was a fabricated concept that a lot of us, you know, embraced early, and there's absolutely no reason why the success that's happened in South End in its own way can occur in the North End. Just like we had Catalyst, if you remember, in South End, we had the South End Brewery, we had Atherton Mill, which said that set the tone for what the rest of the place can be, and Brightwalk is doing that for the North End. It's saying and matching up with what Emma said, this is a place where people have this urban mindset and urban lifestyle to be close to culture and the arts. You can put your stake here, and it will grow from there.
The other two neighborhoods that would be part of this innovation corridor would be Noda and Druid Hills, correct?
Well, there are actually eight neighborhoods.
Okay.
Brightwalk takes up the majority of the old Double Oaks neighborhood, and thanks to the housing partnership, they have brought back the daycare center that was an anchor to that area, and we have the Double Oak School. But I want to just tell you what's really exciting about the people connecting in that area. They already feel the energy of this North End 8 neighborhood area. Next week, in 2 weeks, we'll be doing a neighborhood event, and the Noda neighborhood has reached out to us with their biking groups, and we're going to have a neighborhood celebration of the connection of our bike loops and Route 10 to Charlotte. So the neighbors feel this connection of all the eight neighborhoods. So it's happening very quickly. The investment is there by the city, by transportation, And Bright Walk really has brought the rooftops, the people, the place to be, to connect all of these neighborhoods.
You need to pitch this bike thing. Emma's making all of us wear yellow spandex, in fact, when we go on this big bike ride. So
I want to see you in that.
I ordered mine, actually. It came in yesterday. I am a cyclist, so I got my yellow shirt.
We're going to inaugurate the Bright Loop bike loop, which will be roughly a 3.5-mile loop that will run through the Music Factory, through the Bright Walk neighborhood and the Statesville Avenue Quarter, past the amazingly beautiful fire headquarters and call centers that are underway.
Can you move the booty loop to that location, please?
Well, we were tempted to call this the non-booty loop, but we want our own Bright Loop neighborhood.
Okay. Yeah, but we talked about that. You know, like the booty loop is such an intense kind of biking deal. We need a biking loop for lovers, not fighters. I mean, it seems like you get all the racers and everything on the booty loop.
Some say that this development is the key to the success of the redevelopment of the North Corridor. And if that's the case, what has to happen to make this successful?
If your question is what has to happen to make Bright Walk successful, we are accomplishing the goals that the Housing Partnership has, so we are well on our way to building out a very beautiful, dense, responsible neighborhood for residents of Center City. And as of today, we'll have well over 80 residents participating in our neighborhood picnic of the homes. We currently have several hundred other residents that are renters. So nothing else needs to be done. We just all need to keep building homes and working on the great partnerships and collaborations that we've developed.
But let me tell you, Mike, the most important thing for, I think, Charlotte is that we're creating a model that can be replicated. Very early on, we realized we needed to have the right team, and you're talking to two of the best in the game when it comes to land use and marketing with Terry and Emma. So we're learning a lot of lessons that can be replicated in other places. That's what we're excited about.
This is new construction. This is not repurposed older construction. You're actually building this from the ground up, and you have a very well-known commercial builder involved in all this. But the Housing Partnership is also involved in this, and this is supposed to be creating affordable workforce housing.
In this situation, it's both.
Okay.
In this situation, we're talking about revitalization of an inner-city community. So what we're doing is trying to bring market forces back. This neighborhood was already affordable. So what we're trying to do is introduce marketing to it so it's mixed income.
So how do you get a builder who could make a lot of money with an inner city neighborhood? You could charge outrageous prices to live in this area to build homes that are affordable.
Well, we took care of that by developing multifamily as a part of it early on. Terry actually designed it. Some of this is about as much not just who you serve, but the way it feels and it looks. So by designing it so it fits in, so you manage it well, you design it well, and then you let the market forces come in. So a lot of this is taking care of itself.
I think a key point really is about being responsible with your land planning and building smaller, denser, compact housing that suits the needs of the current urban dweller. So Stand Pacific stepped up and understood the opportunity and designed specific product with our team that includes single-family homes, two-car garages, and auxiliary units, which is the first Charlotte neighborhood to have auxiliary housing units.
And it's urban. It's alley-fed. I mean, you know, it is the kind of neighborhoods you would see up north.
I want to come back and talk about auxiliary units. I don't even know what they are. We'll come back and talk about that in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Donald Hack Diamonds, serving Charlotte for over 30 years with fine diamonds, engagement rings, custom design, and jewelry for all occasions. Donald Hack Diamonds, Sharon Road, across from South Park Mall, and DonaldHack.com. And from Audi of Charlotte, presenting a selection of luxury vehicles committed to customer service and satisfaction on East Independence Boulevard inside the 485 Beltway. Audi, truth and engineering. Information at AudiofCharlotte.com. Down syndrome is the most commonly occurring genetic condition, and the good news is that great strides have been made and continue to be made in both the care of people living with Down and with their life expectancy. But those with longer lives, well, that comes with different challenges, and we're going to examine the reality of living with Down syndrome for parents of young children and with the people with Down syndrome as an adult. That's Monday morning at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Friday News Roundup. The House floats a plan to avert a government shutdown. Treasury warns the debt ceiling limit will be reached by October 17th. And the Obama administration sets prices for the new federally run healthcare marketplaces.
You're invited to join the News Roundup on the Diane Rehm Show this morning, right after Charlotte Talks from 10 to noon on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about development in Charlotte coming out of the recession. We're going to talk about a project in the South End in a minute or two, but we're focusing our attention on the North Corridor right now with Terry Shook, president of Shook Kelly. They are a design firm. David Howard is senior vice president of the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Housing Partnership, and Emma Littlejohn is a real estate market analyst with Littlejohn Group. All three have collaborated on this Brightwalk neighborhood, which is going up in the North Corridor. And you mentioned, Emma, these auxiliary housing scattered in amongst the houses and apartment buildings. What is auxiliary housing?
Auxiliary housing is really the granny unit, the extra space, the space over the garage that's flexible space and can be used for residents within the family. And no one else has done this. It's a key way that a lot of municipalities have worked to increase density and livability as well as affordability. More people can live in a home or in together in shared space.
Hmm. And it's over the garage, and you can tailor that space how you want.
Absolutely.
Okay. One of the critical issues that any neighborhood needs is access to the daily needs of life, like grocery stores. Where do I go and buy milk, for instance? How likely, because I don't think there's a lot of stuff out there, how likely is that to be overcome quickly?
But let's remember where we are. We're a mile from downtown. So, I mean, I think we're from the
It's hard to find a grocery store here, too.
Well, from the Target, you're 2 miles. From the Harris Teeter in Fort Ford, you're less than a mile. I mean, you know, there are options. I mean, you know, you just learn those routes once you get in there. And we're still trying to find other people to come in to deal with those commercial needs.
This is also, at least the website for this development, it says it's all about conserving precious resources, your time, energy, and money, while fending off nature deficit disorder. How?
Well, the great thing about the planning of this, not unlike Dilworth and Myers Park, is that we did not neglect to create a range of great green open spaces. Some were natural. We have the creek that goes through there between us and the school that's been there for the longest time. So we purposefully made that a park with houses that front the park, Mike, which is important, instead of being in the back where it's a no man's land. And sometimes in just the private yard, we said, no, this is part of that public realm. Everybody can walk, be a part of that park, work on the street in the park, and then smaller pocket parks at various places through those boulevards, greens in the boulevards that you can use that will have and feature an art program. So there's a range of things within there where people can connect. The house is small to support the family and lifestyle needs and the socialization that take place in that, and then the parks. I might add, too, one thing about these houses. Again, just like South End, I put my money where my mouth is. Just as I helped my daughter buy a house inside Brightwalk, so my own daughter lives in there. So she's very much part of this new generation.
The design was made with the existing road infrastructure in place. Mm-hmm. The homes were faced, and as Terry said, we have designed everything to take advantage of the open spaces. But there are three or four key things that really speak to the sustainability of the neighborhood. Number one is the builder was committed to a product that was sustainable and enduring. Even the lawns have zoysia type of grass that requires less water and mowing and energy. We've worked in partnerships with Park and Recs to establish amenities that reuse resources. The list goes on, but the most important thing is the McCall Environmental Artists Program that is helping us launch an environmental artist program, which we could talk endlessly about.
But. And we will, but I want to go back to the design of this, because a lot of neighborhoods were built prior to the recession by builders, some of whom put in walking trails and ponds and tried to bring in some sort of natural feel, but without taking away too much land, because they wanted to put houses on the land. How does this differ from those plans?
Well, the great thing about this is that I mentioned to you before, there were 18 acres acres of established park space around it already. So what we've been doing is working with my good friend Lee Jones and some other folks over at Park and Rec to actually improve this space. Mm-hmm. And we've got matching grants. We've got this new program with the McCall Center where they're going to put in, Mike, 8 installations of environmental art. And they got $400,000 grant to do that. This is going to be world-class, internationally recognized environmental art. So we're improving the space that was around it already. We didn't have to bring it in. We were already in the setting where we had open space. And in addition to that, we decided to be sustainable from the very beginning. We kept big trees. When you go over there, you'll see we work with CDOT to make sure that we meandered the sidewalk around these big trees so we didn't take them out. So you have this natural landscape because we didn't clear cut it from the beginning. Mm-hmm. Sustainability down to the point that we took the old brick, the old concrete, and the old asphalt, grinded it up, and we used it back in the beds of the building. We've used it back in the construction of the site. I mean, sustainability to the nth degree when you're reusing a neighborhood. We've been serious about that from the beginning.
Is this more expensive to do it that way, or is it less expensive to do it that way?
It actually has been good. We took that same – we didn't have to take big trucks and take it out and then bring stuff back in. We kept it on site. We grinded it up, and we've moved. It's been about the same cost, to be honest.
In many ways, we're following the principle. Someone was on your show a year and a half ago. You remember Bill McDonough with mm-hmm. Cradle to Cradle. Mm-hmm. This is the start of that process. You know, nothing is really waste. Everything is another material, another nutrient that we can use, and that's the best way to use these sites. Another part about the planning, too, Mike, again, as opposed to a suburban community, this attracts people that are convivial. The way this sets up, with the sidewalks, with the parks, with houses that front green space. Most houses are with close proximity of that green space where you can have a great street life and can also have a great connection with nature through these parks. You can get both. You don't have to compromise, really.
And the only thing I'll add is that since my good friend Lee Jones is here, we also got a real commitment from the county early on. They put in money in a bond referendum several years ago to redo the public pool that's there as well. So there's $3.6 million that these guys are going to be spending to redo this historic Double Oaks pool as well. So some of those amenities that were already in the vicinity, we've just worked to improve them.
So let's talk about this art, this environmental art, and the McCall Center's participation in all of this. What is environmental art? We've talked about public art on this program. What's environmental art?
Art is an visual representation of the spirit and energy of the neighborhood. And in this particular case, what the McCall Center is trying to do is to work with us to make any work at the key areas of improvement to utilize artists that are well-versed in art that is environmentally sensitive and built. So we're very excited. We have 4 artists lined up. And we've had our first installation. We had a wetlands area that was causing problems with drainage. And the artists came in and remediated that with natural plants, materials, and it will be something that will be an enduring piece of nature and art right within the county park.
Let me help tell you examples of what they've been proposing already. The artist on site right now is looking at how to help mitigate the runoff of water into the creek. There's another artist that's looking to do something with plastic. The point is that we're going to do this economically. I can't come up with
it. Ergonomically?
That's not the word either.
Okay.
People in McCall are going to get me for not being able to say it right. It's about education. We'll have this campus where you can go through and learn about all these different aspects of how to mitigate the effects of development on the environment. Mm. So we have this this one artist talking about planting fruit trees in a creative way so that the property is actually now producing its own food.
This sounds like landscape architecture.
In many ways it is, but you know, this is the whole thing we're talking about. It's a purposeful landscape, Mike. And you know, you go to suburbia a lot of times with the houses that were nothing but a great big driveway that leads right into the garage, and whatever is left over in the environment is just happens to be left over. We see the entire landscape program at Bright Walk as a purposeful effort in introducing people to environmentalism, not in a hit you over the head with it, hit you through the face, but a natural way that kids learn.
So these aren't necessarily sculptures.
No, there will be sculptures.
There will be.
Some will be.
There's
yeah.
a group. There's one lady who's coming in talking about using plastic. I mean, she and we'll take it as an opportunity to educate the kids when they come through. You know, what happens with all the bottles that we do, and what do you do with it, and turning it into one piece that will be an educational piece.
Aside from the environmental part of the art, why was it decided that this is important? This is an inner city neighborhood, but it's also kind of a suburban-esque neighborhood in the inner city. So why is art important? It doesn't appear anywhere else.
Well, I'll help you with that one. I mean, it's part of the Project Lift neighborhood areas, and we really got excited about, you know, how do you repurpose this park and this old open space? And you have a chance, Mike, to educate a population in the inner city that had never even been exposed to what these environmental principles are. I mean, you know, so you get a chance to not only have this very unique, cool place, but you actually have an opportunity to educate people that wouldn't have been exposed to it otherwise.
The price points on these homes are $100,000 to $300,000, give or take a few things here or there. Affordable is in the eye of the beholder, I suppose. How do you make these affordable? I mean, it's a remarkable price when you consider the proximity of these houses to uptown. But how do you characterize them as affordable? How do you make them affordable to people who can't afford $300,000?
Well, what you do is we made a commitment early on to put back 300 units of affordable rental. So that'll be part of that 750 or so units that will go back. So that's a good chunk of it. We've actually also made sure that units were designed because we have townhouses and single-family houses that are priced in a certain range so that people can afford them. And we have incredible down payment assistance as well to help people get into those units that will help people at lower incomes as well. So, I mean, we wanted to make sure this was a good mix, not just one or the other.
Now, one of the causes of the Great Recession was people buying more house than they could afford and lenders irresponsibly allowing them to take out loans on property that they could not pay for. Mm-hmm. How do you ensure that's not going to happen in this neighborhood?
What I'll tell you is this. The housing partnership and our bank partners who have participated with us have put together programs for a variety of individuals. And I will say this, that the people that are going into the housing market today are very cautious. So on both sides of the equation, both the homeowner and the lenders are looking to make sure that we have a perfect partnership that is responsible. And I think that at this point, we've been very blessed with the community's banks, reinvestment monies, and other monies that are people looking to steward, people who can afford and maintain a home.
Mm-hmm. The purpose of this was to say what's next, and maybe next is the answer to Linda's email. Linda has written saying, the Charlotte area needs to address the needs of retiring baby boomers and seniors. We need affordable one-story residences with choices of patio homes, townhomes, and condos with low maintenance. Will Brightwalk address these needs? Currently, I don't see this being offered. It's difficult to find these options without moving to Florida or Arizona. Very frustrating. I would also like to see community gardens in this neighborhood.
I don't know how I missed that. Out of those 216 units that have been developed, 72 are senior buildings. Prior to that, there was that's Gables 2. Prior to that, we developed Gables 1. Both of those are senior buildings that are right in the middle of this neighborhood. In addition to another senior building up the street. So, I mean, it's walkable. That's part of these trails through this park. I mean, you know, we're very much already addressing the intergenerational at this place.
Emma, you say that this could become the next Dilworth, and it kind of looks a little bit like Dilworth might have when it was brand spanking new. Why do you say that?
First of all, the proximity. Second of all, the great planning and open spaces. We're adjacent to a park just like Latta Park. We're in a area that has a tremendous amount of potential to build more residential, over 100 acres. The scale of the site is very similar. The ability to do the variety of housing. Dilworth happens to have the widest variety of housing, both crisis housing to upper and luxury housing, and we can replicate that on all fronts.
And it's the future for this city now in the era of annexation. Now the annexation is over, and we're going to grow this city internally, focusing on new places like Brightwalk, where no one thought of it before, mm-hmm. and in that manner that links great neighborhoods with great art, with great nature, is what we have to do.
I'm a Little John with the Little John Group, and David Howard with the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Housing Partnership. Thank you for being with us this morning. I appreciate it. Stick around, Terry. You want to say one more thing?
Well, just the last thing, Mike, is that I'll tell you, you can't do this without great partnerships. And the banks, Park and Rec, the foundations, I mean, they've just been great. And I wanted to thank them publicly while we're on the air.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Let's turn our attention now from just north of the city to just south of the city, in fact, to South End, where a project has been proposed to connect the quickly expanding neighborhoods of that area with Uptown. Interestingly, the idea behind this new connection has its roots in a project that met with great success in New York City, where planners turned an abandoned elevated railway line into a park called High Line. In Charlotte, our project is called the Rail Trail. And again, one of the masterminds behind that plan is Terry Shook of Shook Kelly. He joined forces with architect and co-founder of Centro City Works, David Furman, to do the initial study on the rail trail. And David Furman helped to further develop that vision. And David joins us now. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Michael Smith is president and CEO of Charlotte Center City Partners, which not only has Uptown as a sphere of influence, but the South End area as well. He's building an empire. Michael championed the idea of the rail trail and is also with us today. Welcome back.
Good morning.
And also joining us to speak with us is Lee Jones, Division Director of Capital Planning and Alliance Development Services with Mecklenburg County Parks and Recreation. He oversees the planning, design, and construction of park and rec facilities. Thanks for being here.
Morning.
Good morning. This has not started yet, but as I said, it was based on the High Line in New York City. Is that where the idea came from, or is that simply did we find that and realize it could work after we came up with the idea for connecting these neighborhoods?
I'm not sure it was based on the High Line initially. Lee and Park and Rec have been looking for a park to be built in South End ever since it's been flourishing so grandly over there now. And the trail actually exists. It has become this de facto park, so that it exists now. People are using it every day. You see people strolling, biking, walking their dogs out there every day. It's very active. And I, as an uptown person, have used that thing all the time. You know, if you live downtown, you live on top of the hill, and everything goes off the hill. So biking back to the center city is always a challenge. But if you go out the trail, it's almost level, so it's a great way to come back. But as I've done that ever since the Lynx Line has been built, you travel that trail and you see all these incredible opportunities. There's leftover pieces of property that are behind restaurants, in between parking garages and the site. There are all sorts of active retail and bar and restaurant adjacencies that need connections. There are large pieces of land that could be captured and made into something more grand. And then, of course, it does not link downtown. So we need to figure out a way to link it to Center City, which is a bit of a challenge.
So what you're
doing, it has such tremendous potential.
What you're doing, essentially, is taking a thing that already exists, sprucing it up, making it pretty, and connecting all the disparate pieces that don't currently connect.
Yeah, and that's different from the High Line. The High Line was an existing abandoned rail line that was in one piece taken, designed as one piece, and financed and built as one piece. This already exists, and I think it can be captured and enhanced in these various pieces.
And connecting is a key word there, Michael, because I think we have so many projects that have been built. If we don't have the thing that binds them together, we're just going to have a collection of projects.
So we'll come back and talk more about the rail trail, what it's proposed to look like, when things will start, why we need it, etc., in just a moment at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Lenoir Ryan University graduate programs offering master's degrees in a variety of disciplines from the Hickory, Asheville, and Columbia, South Carolina campuses. Details at lr.edu/graduate. And Fisher & Phillips LLP, a national labor and employment law firm representing employers in North Carolina from the Charlotte and Columbia offices. Partner Mason Alexander and Fisher & Phillips on the web at laborlawyers.com. It's the weekly news roundup on the Diane Rehm Show, the National Hour first at 10, the International Hour at 11 with Susan Page sitting in for Diane Rehm. Of course, we're coming up to the funding of the government. That will be one of the key topics of conversation at 10 o'clock. Thanks to everybody who's contributed in the past few weeks. You've helped eliminate 2 days of the upcoming fall fund drive. You've already eliminated 2 days of the fund drive, and that means you can eliminate another day after we raise an additional $55,000 by October the 9th. WFAE.org for details.
The world comes at you fast, on air, online, on your phone. There's an awful lot of information to process, And let's face it, your time is valuable. I'm Robert Siegel, and all things considered, we cut through the clutter, mining the data to separate the facts from the fluff. All Things Considered from NPR News, on the clock, every day.
All Things Considered from 4 to 6:30 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking in this segment about the rail trail with Terry Shook, David Furman, Michael Smith, and Lee Jones, all with various different entities that are part of this. This is going to be a 3.3-mile trail connecting Sedgefield, Southside Park, Brook Hill, Dilworth, Wilmore, South End, and eventually uptown. This is going to be along the existing Lynx Blue Line, and stretches of this, as you say, David, are already in existence and already being really, really used.
They are. And it currently exists from, I guess, just outside of the loop, which ends where the last trolley stop was behind the Grandview Apartments, just at East Moorhead. And it extends from there to a maintenance facility that is out South Boulevard, almost to Clanton Road.
Mm-hmm.
If it links to Center City, and then it could link all the way over to 9th Street downtown to connect the new UNCC urban building. But yes, that it just has this tremendous potential. It exists, and we have created a vision plan that would capture all these various episodes and chapters along the way and link them together into a destination.
I looked at a lot of pictures of this yesterday, and you can go and see what we're talking about here. A good place to go is the charlottecentercity.org website,
and
click on the video of this. It's kind of interesting to see what this could all come to be like. But who did the design?
Well, it's a collaborative effort. I mean, David actually, kicked off the idea, David and our group and land design,
Richard Peterson,
came together.
It was a recommendation of the 2020 Vision Plan,
right?
And Center City Partners pulled together this great collaborative of Charlotte designers of land design, Shook Kelly, and of David Furman, his design firm. And it's incredible the vision that they came up with, which became the platform for this idea that is going to connect all these neighborhoods. It's going to create a well-articulated kind of recreation facility, but also a third place. I mean, it's more infrastructure for our great urban neighborhoods.
When you say this is part of the 2020 plan, does that mean that there's a commitment to actually seeing this through, to actually making this happen?
No, the 2020 plan is a vision plan, and it's intended to shape policy. It's intended to look out 10, 20, 30 years and the things that we would like to do, and part of it so that it doesn't preclude us from accomplishing one of those items.
We have Lee Jones here from the Department of Parks and Recreation, and this is a trail that goes along the light rail line, some of which, as we've said, is in use now. How does the Parks Department figure into this?
Well, as the purveyors or providers of trails for our greenway system, we've been looking at this area for quite a while, not just for parks but for connectivity. And this trail allows a great opportunity for pedestrian connectivity, which is what we do in our greenway plan. We see opportunities for pedestrians to be able to experience. We're basically working to connect the dots here, just like we would do for any long-range plan, our 10-year greenway plan and our 10-year park and recreation plan. This fits right into it, but in a smaller area. So as David was saying earlier, what we're doing is we're looking at these different spots. People are already using this trail. They've made a trail there. Now we have to look at it more intensely and actually connect the dots, similar to the way we would do a greenway plan.
So this would be a linear park.
Yes, it would be a linear park with a series of nodes, both with an emphasis on pedestrian transportation.
And these nodes would be just little stopping off enlargement places where people could have a picnic or play games. I even saw on this a video that's on the Charlotte Center's website a stage with a little tiny amphitheater where people could sit and watch a performer do whatever he wants to do or she wants to do.
In the vision plan, we've tried to think of as many things as we can, and they're just ideas.
Okay.
But they're ideas where people, as they're walking along this trail, there's an opportunity for things to happen. And we're trying to figure out a way to do ordinary things in an extraordinary manner.
Now, it's an urban park. For you think about it, we're going to have an incredible amount of people living in the apartments that are really the true urbanists. And this is an alternative park. This is such a passive park, which we have so many of, Charlotte's right. first truly urban park, urban experience.
The people who have not been to South End in recent years do not understand that along the Blue Line, there are so many apartments going up right now and mm-hmm. condos going up. Well, I heard, and you can correct me on the number here. But, well, I heard that there are going to be 5,000 people.
Condos next.
they're apartments now.
But I heard there are going to be 5,000 people living there when these are
yes,
all done.
Yes, there will be over 5,000 people living in the South End.
That's an enormous number of people. And I would think if you're going to live in an apartment, which is 5 or 6 or 7 stories tall, in an urban environment, you would want access to something like this just to get into nature again.
Probably about 3,000 dogs with this 5,000 people, by the way, too. That's the other part of this.
Say that right. again?
Probably about 3,000 dogs with this 5,000 okay, yes. people.
That's right.
The linear dog park.
ULI have a study where it's like 70% of the demographic own pets, and well, most of which were dogs. It's uh-huh. amazing
all
statistic.
Dogs.
All dogs, yes.
Dogs are kids. Yeah. But right. what you have to think about also is that, you know, we're in the along this trail you have a series of outdoor rooms, and then the type of amenities that people want. I think you hit it. You know, you have people that have dogs there. Certainly, they're going to want a place to walk their dogs. We have to be careful with the whole dog park concept, however, mm-hmm. and be able to meet those needs. And you got to have people that are going to be active and people going to be static at the same time. So you're going to have to meet all those needs along this trail.
And you also see connecting this to businesses that already exist, which sometimes when I've been down there and I've walked along this, I'm thinking, gosh, I'd like to go over there right. because there's a restaurant over
yes.
there. There but I go. Can't get there right. from this path.
You're Bingo. Talking about, you hit it right on the nail.
You're talking about opening that up, and you're talking also about developing areas that don't exist right now, like little sidewalk cafes and places just to have a cup of coffee or whatever
maybe
it may be.
Beer
right?
garden?
Yes, I saw that on the – a beer garden.
We've got an incredible number of new craft breweries that are right. popping up in the South End. Mm-hmm. That's another part of the South End we'd love to celebrate. And I think that's part of it is the rail trail in the South End needs to be very different than the rail trail in Uptown because it needs to be a unique connector and celebrator of what is the
and
culture
it,
of that
and, and it would be different but similar in some ways to the Greenway that goes down, I guess, from the hospital almost to CPCC, that part of the
Little
Greenway.
Sugar Creek.
Yeah.
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 I think it would be very, very different.
Okay. It'll be different in several ways, one of which is the Greenway is beautiful and it's an incredible asset to our community, but it's designed in one action, mm-hmm. and therefore it flows together through a uniform design. This will grow. It'll grow from grassroots, and pieces of it will be different. There will be diverse pieces of it that tie together, and that differentiates it from the High Line as well, which is one holistic design.
Well, exactly. And the High Line actually is in New York City as a respite, so like a big long Zen garden. For mm-hmm. us, this wants to be a hot activity zone. And you know, the other part about it is too is one of the early South End people. We identify that area from Tremont to Bland Street as being like Main Street South End, that would be that center of activity. And the way that's set up is that it needs to happen along that section of the rail trail with the buildings that have yet to really be renovated along that zone. It's still an open opportunity. So the rail trail, along with new zoning ordinances, hopefully will make that this activity we're talking about.
Although we keep talking about this as a linear park, and when you think park, you think grass and trees. A lot of this is hardscape, at least what I saw in the drawings.
Most of it is hardscape.
It definitely will be. You know, the greenways are driven by the tributaries. You know, we put the trails along the tribs and along our creeks. The rail trail will have that sort of – it'll be a linear transportation component. Mm-hmm. However, it'll have a different level of experience as you'll see the type of living, the type of progressive neighborhood and active neighborhood that's in the South End. So it's a much more dense neighborhood. And we're hoping that we'll be able to connect the rail trail at some point through our long-range greenway plan, possibly up to Urban Creek, over to West Boulevard, and maybe to Little Sugar Creek, and Latta Park.
How do you do that?
You do it with a series of overland connectors, which you'd come off to a point, you'd cross crosswalks and get down to these other nodes. Mm-hmm. We try to connect a lot of experiences, shopping and our parks and residential with our greenway plan, and we'll do it with the rail trail also.
The big impediment to connecting all this to Uptown, I would think, Michael, is I-277, and there have been proposals to cover parts of I-277, which sound monstrously expensive and therefore probably not going to happen in our lifetime, at least. But how is it possible to connect a rail trail? I mean, is it possible to build the train does go from South End into uptown, but it's on a small overpass. Can you expand the overpass? What would you do?
Well, the original Blue Line had a pedestrian connection alongside it. It was value engineered out in order to get the budget to fit the approved budget and us to be able to build out the Blue Line. We are going to have to think of it in other ways. The current plan contemplates making a move up to Tryon Street and then getting the pedestrians aligned to more of a Tryon Street connection. And that's why some of the skip money for the Blue Line was spent improving the Tryon Street Bridge and improving that pedestrian connectivity.
You know, even if we had the connection across the bridge where the Lynx Line is now, it would have stopped at the convention center because you couldn't have gone through that.
Right.
And so this could actually end up being a better pedestrian link. The Tryon Street Bridge has already been enhanced. It's been squeezed down to two lanes with bike lanes and wide sidewalks and street lights. It's really quite a pleasant connector at this point. So the challenge is getting the trail up to Tryon Street. And through our vision plan, we have a way of doing that to get it up there. Once it gets to Tryon Street, then you can connect to the Cultural Arts Campus, which is fabulous piece of downtown,
exactly.
And to the Green, which is another wonderful urban park, and to Mayor Bearden Park.
That's
which is unbelievable.
Because Tryon Street is our best walkable environment. So, of course, we would want to get
it's a tremendous
the folks
urban
there.
Trail.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know, it strikes me as we're having this conversation. We've had a lot of conversations on this program about development, about how growing Charlotte. But if you've been here a long time, you can actually see what has happened here. Since 1985, for instance, it's a completely different city, and Uptown is a completely different environment. You people are building a city, and we're watching it happening before our eyes. What's it like to be on your side of the desk?
From my perspective, I think it's great. I've been here 9.5 years. I've kept in touch with my peers from college, and a lot of them are moving here. I just got an email the other day. My wife just got a degree in library science. You've got a great park and recreation program. The city is growing a lot of businesses. I want to come here. It's great to see.
And I know that there are a lot of people who do not and will never understand any of this and don't approve of any of this. I understand that. They didn't like the Blue Line. They still don't like it. They don't like public money going for that or arenas. But we had a sports consultant on here on this program yesterday who works with teams and cities all over the country, and he says Charlotte is one of the cities who did it right. We let a team walk away because we didn't like the owner, and we said no, and then we decided we're going to get a new basketball team, and we built the arena in the right place, which has improved everything around it.
This is
by design.
Yeah, and as a downtown resident and a basketball fan, I can't tell you how much I enjoy walking, you know, two blocks to the arena to go to NBA games. That's fabulous. And also, when I look out my window and I look down and see how this quadrant of the city has tremendous – is metamorphosed into a wonderful neighborhood around Romare Bearden Park and the emerging baseball stadium, which, as you can see, they're almost ready to start – you know, rolling out the green down there. The lights are in place. It's fantastic. When I come home on a Saturday night and walk back through Romare Bearden Park as I did the other night, and it's probably 10 o'clock and there's people out there throwing glow-in-the-dark frisbees and sitting on benches and sitting next to the fountain with their feet in the fountain and just hanging out and strolling around that park. It's just an amazing, amazing place.
How much will this cost? If we can afford to build out the plan that you and Terry Shook have and others have visualized, how much would all this cost and where would the money come from?
We have not finished the framework plan. We are just about to hire a firm to take it from vision to framework. The framework will learn a lot more about more specifics about the design elements that we want to have in it, the actual pieces we want to have built out, talk about who might be responsible for some of those, because this is going to be a lot of grassroots effort, a lot of people agreeing to give right-of-way to their property, maybe improving part of their property, maybe developing in a way that animates and creates one of these experiences.
It's happening now. I mean, we're currently meeting with developers that are developing along the trail and convincing them of the vision so that they're enhancing what they're supposed to do now, what they are mandated to do as they're part of the trail, and they're upping the ante and they're making it better, and it's really gratifying to watch. I think the thing about financing this, there will be some financing strategy that comes out of the framework plan, but it's not like we're going to design some comprehensive issue, put a price tag on it, and go try to figure out how to raise millions and millions of dollars to make that happen. It's going to evolve in pieces, and those pieces, some of which are going to be very modest, they're going to be sort of homegrown and home financed, and some of them will be bigger, where we'll need Park and Rec and the county and the city to be part of that, and CDOT, et cetera.
So you do see it rolling out in sections, essentially.
Yes, definitely.
Most definitely.
And maybe not contiguous sections.
Maybe not contiguous, right. It will evolve in pieces.
So I'm not exactly sure where you are in the process here, but when might we – I'm assuming that we will go forward with at least some of this at some point. When?
Well, we will hire the firm to create the framework plan. That'll be a six-month process. But concurrently, we're talking to property owners.
Yeah,
we're working on stuff
right now. There's some of it's in for permits right now. Developers are enhancing their piece of the trail. It's in for permits, and we'll see that. And we're also meeting with other people and are going to put forward these smaller models to happen in the next few months.
I only have 30 seconds left, but there are always naysayers to most changes that go on in any city. Are there naysayers in this project, or are they mostly people saying, let's do it?
I haven't run into any.
It's been amazing
the support we've seen. The big question, of course, is how are you going to pay for it?
Right.
And we've got to figure out that strategy.
We haven't. It's hard to do a decent job of describing what we're talking about, but you can go to charlottecentercity.org and see a video about what they're envisioning for the rail trail. David Furman, Michael Smith, Lee Jones, and earlier Terry Shook, thank you all for being here.